Hey everyone, it's Noor. This episode of AdTech Unfiltered speaks to a theme that some may not find to be intrinsically AdTech focused, but for a series of reasons that we're about to discuss, it definitely is. We're having a first of a series of conversations on tackling diversity and inclusion in AdTech and the greater advertising ecosystem. Our guest today is Veronica Appleton. She's a lecturer, educator, facilitator, and executive of DEI Work, and was recently appointed as the VP of Diversity and Inclusion at The Marketing Arm, a creative ad agency owned by Omnicom. This episode will serve as a primer to begin touching on many of the issues that the advertising world is working to tackle as it pertains to diversity and inclusion. This episode of AdTech Unfiltered starts right now. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us today to have this really important conversation around diversity and inclusion and how advertising organizations are tackling it.
Thank you so much. It's really, really great to be speaking with you, and I'm happy for our discussion.
As the pandemic continues and as we live in this time of so many different layered crises, think about how I even came upon learning about you and knowing you. And it was when I saw you as a moderator on another panel speaking to diversity and inclusion. So there's been so many unfortunate things that are happening in the world, but the nice thing is sometimes we're having the opportunity to connect with new people that we otherwise wouldn't have. So I'll just go ahead and jump into a couple of questions, starting with getting a sense of how you decided to do this work professionally. When did you realize that there was a need for doing diversity and inclusion work specifically in the advertising industry?
I wrote about my experience of interviewing within this space, and in space as in advertising industry and marketing industry, and my own eyes were seeing the problems. I remember it was an interview where I walked into a public relations firm, very well known here in Chicago. And after the interview, I went on kind of like a tour around the office, and I seen about three people who would kind of just look like me, right? I seen maybe a black male, a female or two, and then someone who may identify as Latino. And I immediately said to myself, I was like, you know, I am not going to get this job. And, you know, after any interview, I sent all of my thank you notes, I sent notes to the recruiter, no answer until about 3 to 4 weeks later, and I didn't get the role. And I knew that something about that experience was not new. You know, it was something that maybe somebody else has experienced. I did a little research and I found, right, the statistics that were plaguing this industry. And I knew that there's something that I had to do. I had to figure it out. And so initially it was my interviewing experience, right? It's being embedded in the process and just seeing that you're not gonna win in that space. And so that just really, really set me on fire in terms of doing more research. And then I enrolled in a doctoral program and I furthered my research from there. So it had to take my personal experience for me to see what was really going on.
Was it that experience then that became the inciting incident that made you want to pursue this work and be a part of helping solve the many diversity and inclusion problems that this industry has?
It was an opportunity for me to really just take a look at what I had to offer. I knew I was skilled. You know, I knew I had the capabilities. And so I started volunteering with the local nonprofit here in the city that was committed to marketing, advertising, and public relations. And those opportunities gave me a chance to connect with these agencies, right? Connect with these brands. And lo and behold, wow, there's people of color that work for these organizations. And building those relationships were so pivotal for me and my career, because you get to, one, see yourself, and two, you get to connect with people that are doing the work that you want to do. At that time, networking events were huge, consulting with those organizations, right? And just those small conversations, it was just all worth it. The pivot into the industry was twofold. One, I knew that I kind of had to have my foot in the door from a practical standpoint, but a piece of me just could not let go the research behind what is really happening in this industry. So I kept my foot in academia, right? So working for a local university here in Chicago, and then my foot in building those relationships from the practical perspective. And I think it was the perfect marriage of the two, because it gives you a full view, right? As an academic, fast forward 8 years into the future today, knowing what I know about the industry from a research ground, it's very important how I shape what strategies, tactics will work or will be enhanced within the workplace, right? Understanding human behavior is huge, right? You can't change humans overnight, but what you can do is guide them and help inform and help influence. That's the power of true change in the workplace. So my experience was coupled with the fact that I didn't get the job. What can I do about it? Who can I connect with? And how can I move forward from there?
So you have this really deeply enriched experience, both pursuing this type of work academically and also by being entrenched in the actual work itself. So I think you're in a good position to answer a question like this one. What are some of the unique D&I issues that plague advertising?
There are so many things, Noor. I would say first and foremost, I believe that now is the time where we must listen to Black voices. There is no way around it. There is no way for us to ignore what Black voices, Latino voices, Asian voices, Indigenous people voices, LGBTQ voices, people with disability voices, those who may be deemed elderly or ageist within the work. Like, we have to create opportunities where people's voices can be heard, but not only heard, but the way that I like to put it, right, is not only be invited for a seat at the table, but when I get to that table, I need to have a meal to eat just like everybody else. And I need to be invited to the next table. We can't just have just one seat and be a seat filler. So some of the issues that plague the industry is how we bid on talent. A lot of things have changed in the last couple of months since the death of George Floyd. And let me correct myself, the murder of George Floyd. So I think, of course, many things have changed, but there are so many things that we have to work on. And that includes the people behind the work, right? So it's the recruiting. It's making sure that companies are considering the mental, the physical, the emotional well-being of their employees.
Do you think that advertising over-indexes with this problem, or is this pretty much a reflection that you learned about being pretty problematic in other industries as well?
I think it's a twofold answer. Right. I have many friends who work in the finance sector, the wealth management sector, construction. Right. So not in the field type of construction, but the corporate office construction, the movie industry, you know, the whole gamut. I believe that this issue is not unique to the advertising industry. I think it's worldwide. Right. We find that there are many organizations that are tussling with the same issue of recruiting and retaining diverse talent. And there are many people that have come before me, right, of course, that have had diversity roles 30 years ago in many corporations, Fortune 500 organizations, and they've been working through these issues. But for some reason, somehow, it's still very prevalent in today's world. And I think, you know, going back to my earlier point about the murder of George Floyd and many others before him, right? If we think about Sandra Bland and Philando Castile and Trayvon Martin, the list goes on and on of people who have been murdered by the hand of police brutality, plus the inner city violence that exists even in a city that I live in, right? Chicago, where there's a tremendous amount of violence in communities that are under-resourced and they don't have what they need in order to progress and to move forward, the lack of education, the lack of healthcare. So you're right. No, this issue is not only unique to the marketing and advertising industry. The reason why it's so important that we focus on it is because of the work that we see on TV, the magazines that we read. If the people behind that work doesn't reflect the community that they're attracting or that they're targeting, that's a problem. Because if I see an ad on TV that isn't reflective of the world, not just me as a Black female, but the world, if it doesn't reflect that, that's a disservice to humanity. So we have to make sure that we create opportunities for people to get a job in this industry. It's not that hard. Creativity is unique to a person's eye, and there shouldn't be a standard way that we look at portfolios anymore. There shouldn't be a standard way that we look at a strategist, marketing science profession. I mean, I could go on and on. There can't be a standard way that we do things anymore.
Yeah. And
for myself, I've been reading a lot of stuff in Ad Age and other publications that speak to the broader umbrella of what falls underneath the advertising industry and realm, and even in ad tech, like it's a big issue. I want to take a moment and just speak a little bit more about George Floyd and how that really became that trigger point where really across industries, but let's talk about it in the context of advertising, where suddenly everything came to a screeching halt and everyone suddenly was aware. What was that like for you as a diversity and inclusion professional, knowing that suddenly you did have the attention of everyone and people were looking at were looking to you for guidance?
Yeah, you know, I have quite a few friends who are not only, you know, serving in diversity roles, but not serving in diversity roles, right? So they may be in, you know, branding, they may be in account management or strategy or creative for that matter. And they have been tasked with, you know, at that time, reflecting the Black life in work and writing Black Lives Matter statements and offering up their opinion and their voice for things that they may have spoken on years ago within their industry. But now at this point, right back in May and June, their voice was finally heard because people had 8 minutes and 46 seconds to watch the murder of yet another Black male on national television. I believe that there was, you know, of course, a state of panic for many organizations to say something, to do something, because when you look at that, when you look at that video and you see that on your TV, if you are human, you're affected by that. Something in you says, this is not right. What can I do? And so if you're in a position of power within an organization, yes, I want to release a statement. Let's increase more diversity in our company. Let's work with more diverse suppliers, vendors, and production houses. Let's do all the things that we can to create change. And you know what? I commend all of those organizations who did that, because if they didn't, then we wouldn't be here where we see all these brands that have changed their names, right? We see teams that have changed their names. We see the NBA, the NFL, all these organizations are responding, I believe, the way that they should, because they were affected. They're all humans at the end of the day. And whether we believe that it was done right or it was done in a performative allyship way, we can't tell the test of time. We can't be fortune tellers either. But what I'm about is seeing people doing something, following up on their promises, and making things happen. And so at that time, you know, yes, I was asked multiple times to, you know, serve as a seminar speaker, to consult, and many friends, right, that do not look like me, right? Many white allies, they said, what should I be reading? What should I be doing? Where should I be donating to? And you know what? The educator in me said, you know what? Let me give you all the details you need. Because as an educator, I have to do that. That's just in me to teach, in me to help people learn. So even to this day, if someone is still asking me, what should I be reading and where should I be volunteering my time? I'm going to tell them, I'm going to give them answers. So I think, you know, kind of like fast forwarding to where we are right now, seeing all of the progress and the change and, you know, all the things that have been made, there's still room for improvement. And there's still a lot of change that we have to do. But I'm happy to see where we've gone and where we've come from. And at this time, we can't get fatigued. You know, we can't close our ears and shut our eyes to what's going on. This isn't going to go away. We have to keep doing this. There's a number of people that have been getting diversity, equity, and inclusion jobs focused on these matters. And I've never seen it that way before. So it's just brilliant. It's brilliant what's happening right now.
I wanted to jump right into what you just said as far as a lot of organizations hiring D&I professionals, DEI professionals. What do you think is commonly misunderstood about D&I work as far as how easy or hard it is to actually achieve goals? And how do you, Veronica, help your clients or the organizations that you work with cement themselves to goals that they can actually achieve and that are practical to achieve?
Yeah. You know, I think what's really great is, you know, at the kind of like the cusp of this movement that we're in right now, it's not a moment. It is definitely a change in time. And I recently even joined an organization to lead diversity, equity, and inclusion. I know several people have who have also done the same thing. And so when we think about, you know, how easy or how hard it is, I don't think any job is easy or lacks any level of hardness, quote unquote. But I think that there's opportunities for growth, and there's many people who may see the role as the, lo and behold, the answer of all questions, the creator of all solutions. And that's really not it, right? Because as we know, just like change management, just like talent management, just like new business, it has to permeate throughout the organization. And everybody has to some level or degree, they have to be in agreement with where the organization is going and where they're going with it, right? If a new program is going to be rolled out, you have a plan, you have a timeline, you may even have some metrics that are aligned to it. The same goes for this type of work. You have to hold everybody accountable, and you have to make sure that people are in the same house as you, right? Because one thing you don't want to do is have a house and you believe it's stable. Maybe it's stable, maybe it's not. And then you have all these new people coming to this new house. And then if it's still on that rocky seesaw, do you really think that people are going to thrive? Do you really think that people are going to be alive and feel as if they can give their all in that organization? And the chief diversity officer is going to make sure that the seesaw stays leveled? No. It takes all the accountability. It takes all the involvement of the executive team, management, mid-level management, right? Those that research tells us are most forgotten, the most unheard, because they're the ones with kind of the boots on the ground. They're the ones managing the teams. So this role is multifaceted in many ways, but it is not the sole creator of solutions, because you need collaboration for that.
Veronica, what are some mistakes that we're seeing organizations make, well-intended organizations, but they're sometimes going down bad paths? What are you seeing out there?
If you have a problem, let's say, for instance, like a problem that's associated with either an ad that you've worked on, or maybe like a program that you've worked on and it's targeted to a certain population. And, you know, after that program or project is released or pre-release, then, you know, you go to that team and you say, hey, I want to talk to all the Latinos, and all the Latinos give you feedback. That's really not inclusive, because it doesn't give you the opportunity to, one, come to them pre the project, right? So really taking their voice into consideration. Everyone wants to be heard, but heard after the fact, after you didn't consult, you didn't provide the insight that was necessary. That's the problem. Those are the optics that no one likes, that you come and talk to them after you've had an opportunity to do what you wanted to do, but you didn't come and talk to them. So some of the mistakes is assuming that one person in the room speaks for an entire population. That's probably problem number one that many people have seen before. Another common mistake is believing that the diversity professional that you've hired, he or she has it under control. We don't have to oversee anything. We don't have to do anything. He could probably have a check-in, but he or she has it all together. That's also a mistake, because if they don't have the support or the collaboration, it's not going to work. Three, I believe, is, you know, the performative allyship, right? It's just showing up when you have to. It's like one of the worst things, because you want to feel as if it's a person of color. You want to feel like people really care about you.
I think a lot of organizations have maybe had that, some iteration of the example you shared about making a decision and then coming back to apologize about it after the fact. And I think they're trying to make amends and say, now we do need to make decisions with consideration for other people in our organization, so we don't get into that place to begin with. Sometimes it's attached to client work. Sometimes it's even attached to D&I work inside of your organization. That makes me think about the topic of coming up with committees, task forces, other types of community groups. How do you assist organizations that are really getting into those spaces for the first time in the event that they didn't already have them, or they weren't supported at the levels that they should have been?
I know many people who have been operating in these types of roles for a really long time, and they themselves have, you know, felt the moments of fatigue, you know, just feeling tired, right? Remember during the time where, at the time of George Floyd's murder, many people were just really sharing, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of having to talk to people about what you should do as a human in this world. And I would say for those who are just getting started, be as open as possible and fully committed as possible.
And when you're saying be as open as possible, Veronica, are you referring to the leadership?
I'm referring to the leadership. I'm referring to those who have stated, I want to start this, right? I want to make sure that our company has a diversity department, a function, a committee, group of people who are just all in on this topic. And, you know, getting started does not only include, you know, creating a training program, but it really creates having open dialogue and testing the temperature and really paying attention to the data, right? What are the employee engagement surveys saying? Because if you have 10 years of data sharing that people feel less valued and they don't feel as if their voices are being heard, that's 10 years of just kind of ignoring what was kind of already there. So going back and taking a look at that data will shape how you approach what needs to be worked on. Taking a look at your current diversity data, how many women and men, the ratios associated. Take a look at the pay equity between not only the gender perspective, but also the racial perspective. What are the pay inequities? Also take a look at your vendors, right? So it's a full audit. So the way that you start, one, it's being as committed and open as possible, no matter who you are, bringing this idea to the table within your organization. Two, it's conducting an audit. It is taking the time to comb through all the pieces of data that your organization has. And then three, it's the follow through and the accountability. So it's committing to number two tremendously. And then that three, right? Number three is just holding yourself and the people involved accountable to keep it moving forward. And then four, I think, is a really, really important one. It is knowing that you are not alone. You're not the only one in the organization that is just taking this on and starting anew. You're not the only one. So when we say hashtag in this together, that's a real thing. Many companies that have been in it are still in it together. So do not think for a second that you're alone. What you need to find are just people that's just going to rally behind you and get the work done. That's it. That's what it's about, getting the work done and committing to it.
How do people in leadership roles, not just leadership roles like yours that are focused on D&I work, who all needs to be a part of championing and ensuring that everyone continues to do what you said, be in this together and not turn into a situation where a couple people are doing this alone?
One of the perks of building diversity and inclusion initiatives within your organization is that you have several people who are rallying behind you. And those folks who have been rallying behind you, they have probably created subgroups of people that rally behind them. And so the birth of employee resource groups and initiative groups, that keeps that flame going, right? Whether it's a community relations initiative or a group that's focused on parents or a group that's focused on, you know, how do we get back to work, right? Like, how do we get back in the office? Let's think of kind of a plan for that. How do we develop subgroups for, you know, women's groups and racial groups that are associated with people of color in your organization? Whatever the case may be, those are the people that are going to keep that flame going. And it'll be your responsibility to also keep the flame going as well.
I'll wrap up our conversation on this question. Do you see change happening in the advertising and larger advertising, ad tech, marketing community?
Of course. Yes. I mean, the numbers have been skyrocketing, right? You see tech companies across the world for the last, 10, 15 years, they've been increasing programming to get more young professionals to start working with them. I think that's brilliant. But you see a tremendous amount of progress in mid-level and senior-level advancements in those spaces, because that's where you can really create the most power. Pipeline programs are perfect. They're great. Hand clap. But if you have an open space on your team and you know it's director level and above, aim to place a person of color in that job, because that's where you see the real change. They can affect the business. They can make decisions. Without that, you're still just developing a strong pipeline, of several candidates who will join the organization at the entry level. They may tap out at about 3 years, maybe 4 years into it. Of course, there's many cases where people continue their full career within the organization. With the rise of innovation and creativity in many competing organizations, you have to get the talent at the highest level that you possibly can, because that's where the real change occurs. So yes, there's tremendous progress. Again, as we shared, right, there's brands that are just doing great things. They're listening to their employees. They're responding in the way that they believe is right. And I can only do the one thing that is important, which is commend them. I can commend them for what they're doing. So tremendous, tremendous progress. And I love that people are now seeing the power of our voices, the power of people of color, the power of people with disabilities. The list goes on and on. Everybody's multidimensional, and that's a beautiful thing.
Well, I appreciate you for joining us today to share your perspective on where the industry is at and where the industry is headed as we continue to tackle diversity and inclusion issues. Hopefully, this is the first of several conversations we'll be having on this topic, because there's a lot of evolution that we're anticipating to see. So thank you for joining us for the conversation today, Veronica.
Of course. Any person that is willing to talk about how we advance the world, you can sign me up anytime.
Thanks again to Veronica Appleton, educator and lecturer of diversity, equity, and inclusion work, and the vice president of DEI at the marketing arm. In the last few months, many inspiring and vocal leaders have stepped up in the advertising world to speak out about the importance of diversity and inclusion work, to share what they've been doing and how they've been helping their organizations and even the larger industry. We'll be turning to them in future episodes. Until then, that's it for this episode. Join us next time for more AdTech Unfiltered.